John, I wonder if anyone in your audience has this issue. My daughter lives in Washington State, works for the feds in the forestry department. She's a tree geneticist. She most likely will lose her job. My wife and I voted for Trump, so she no longer speaks to us. She feels we contributed to her job loss and has stopped all communication with us. Are we alone? I don't know. That's the first time I got a note like that. I'm really sorry to hear that, 763. That's got to be tough on both ends of the divide, and I don't have any advice for you. I don't know how you manage that, but I understand why the daughter feels that way, and you must have felt pretty principled when you voted for Trump. So now, who's going to talk to who first? I suppose you could argue that you didn't know that was going to happen to her, and if you hadn't voted for him, she would still be in these straits, but I can see why she feels the way she does. If that's you and your family, 312-981-7200 is my telephone number. About all of this, by the way, this is just so interesting. On Saturday, this went out to Health and Human Services employees. It says, on Saturday, you received an email from the OPM, is that the Office of Personnel Management, personnel, entitled, "What Did You Do Last Week?" What is it you would say you do here? The directive stated that employees were to submit the bullets detailing accomplishments of the past week. OPM has now rescinded that mandatory requirement. There is no Health and Human Services expectation that HHS employees respond, and there is no impact to your employment either way. That said, if you choose to respond, here are the guidelines for those five bullet points. Respond to the email by the established deadline. Keep your response at a high level of generality and describe your work in a manner to protect sensitive data. If you are engaged in scientific research or reviews, do not identify by name any drug, devices, biologics, therapeutics, or similar items. Respond by replying to the OPM HR email as instructed. And finally, assume that what you write will be read by malign foreign actors and tailor your response accordingly. Boy, doesn't this seem like an exercise in futility from the beginning to the end? Eric Zorn joins us now. He is the publisher of a local newsletter called the Picayune Sentinel, and he's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you. Your story about the woman in forestry and her parents being estranged reminds me of that meme going around on social media where it says, yeah, the woman who voted for the leopards eating faces party says, "I never thought that the leopards would eat my face."
Did you fill out your list of the five things that you've done to justify your work this week?
I did. I do have that. I installed a shower grab bar in our bathroom.
Got it.
I co-led a sing-along for senior citizens out of Plymouth Place and the retirement home out in the suburbs. I patronized the new Cozy Corner franchise restaurant in our neighborhood, which I thought was helping support local economies.
Wow, that's a spin. Keep going.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you asked me what I did last week.
I'm asking for the five most important things you did to justify your employment here. Keep going.
Oh, my employment here. Well, I contributed to the even though I wasn't on the Mincing Rascals last week because I was doing this senior sing-along. Mm-hmm. I know my cape is fluttering behind me right now, but I also contributed to the file. You know, we have this ongoing Google Doc where we kick around ideas for the podcast. So I contributed to that.
You wrote in on the Google Doc. Got it.
Google Doc, got that. And I also put out two pretty good newsletters last week. Two pretty robust newsletters. Is that five yet? Am I there?
Did you swap out something for the Google Doc? Was there something else on the list you didn't get to, or is that it?
Oh, my wife broke her wrist recently on the ice, so I've been doing like all the laundry and all the cleaning. Does that count?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, well, there you go. I think that's at least five. If I separate laundry and cleaning, that's at least five.
My five were told really bad jokes every single day. Number two, hung a mirror in the bedroom. It was a heavy mirror. Wasn't sure where the stud was. That's not easy to do. I watched The Substance with Demi Moore so others won't have to. I found that notebook with all of our usernames and passwords I thought I lost. Boy, that was, if I did one thing right last week, it was that. And I organized some of our financial papers. Not all, but some. How about that?
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm leaving it up to Johanna to find all our tax documents, and because that's something that I recoil from every year. Like, I just can't handle it. I relate to late Mayor Harold Washington, who didn't do his taxes for 5 years just because he just was disorganized. That would have been me.
Was that his excuse, that he was just kind of busy or wasn't good at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think he ended up either owing, I mean, he had to pay some fines, but I think he ended up, like, just passing on refunds. It was one of those things that he avoided.
Oh, wow. So it was legit. It wasn't like he was hiding from paying. He really was just that disorganized.
That's what I remember. Yeah, I think he was just disorganized. I don't think he was dishonest about it. But
to be fair, his birthday was tax day, right? Wasn't his birthday April 15th?
Well, I don't remember that, but I do relate very strongly to this feeling of, like, oh, no, I've got to get all this stuff together. I've got to fill out these forms, and I'd rather do almost anything else than that. And yeah. So then the deadline passes. I know our friend Mary Schmeek is always, like, always files for extensions because she just can't deal with that.
Mary, really? Oh,
yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah. I hope I'm not betraying a confidence here, but I certainly relate to that feeling.
A lot of IRS agents that listen to this show, actually the remaining IRS agents, I believe there's 9 of them, and if they're listening, they may be dialing in on Mary's forms now.
Well, what else are they going to be doing, because they're not working right now?
Did you hear our conversation with the state lawmaker about medical aid and dying in Illinois? I'm pro. Where are you on that?
I'm also pro on that. I certainly understand the hesitation that people have. They don't want to have any elderly people or disabled people be pressured into taking, you know, I mean, the law allows doctors, they have to wait 2 layers of review, I believe, and then the doctor prescribes the medication, the fatal doses of medication, but does not administer it. And there's a waiting period. There's a lot of safeguards in there. And I understand why people feel like there maybe aren't enough safeguards, but we have experience around the country. I think there are 10 states already that allow for medical aid in dying, or assisted suicide, as some people call it. And I certainly want to have that option for myself at some point, if that ever happens. You know, if I get into a situation where I have a terminal disease and it's a drag on my family and on my own psyche, I would think, hey, it's my life and it's my choice. And who are these people in Springfield to tell me what I can and can't do?
Right. And I'm in pain and you're not. So butt out. It's very easy to get very angry about this very quickly. And I know it's not perfect, but you know what? Mind your own beeswax.
Well, that's totally how I feel about it. It's like I want it to be my decision. I don't like the idea of people being pressured into it. I don't know that that's become a problem anywhere. But I just feel like this has got to be my choice. And I see a lot of senior citizens who are struggling in a lot of pain, who never would have signed on to live the way they're living, but they have no real choice in the matter. So I've always been supportive of groups like the Hemlock Society that assist people in this in extra medical ways, right? Yeah. Instructions online on how to do this for yourself.
And it shouldn't resort to that. A couple of messages from listeners include, I'm 100% on board with the bill proposed by the state senator to legalize medical aid in dying. I don't know if social media is to blame, but many Americans have come to believe that their opinions matter in everything, including issues that would not impact them. And 847 said, I truly agree with medical aid in dying, but I've got a good friend who was given 3 to 6 months to live more than 2 years ago. He went on a trial and voila, he's pretty darn good. He's living life. He's with his family and friends and he golfs 2 to 3 times a week. Well, remember, most folks, when they do finally pass the 6 month threshold, don't use the drug. They don't end their life. You don't have to do it. But wouldn't you like to have that as an option when it did become unmanageable, when it did become so difficult for you? You thought, I'm out. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And, yeah, I wouldn't end it on the 6th month and 1 day if I didn't have to. I don't think I'd be golfing 2 or 3 times a week. I might be playing pickleball. But thanks for your responses to that.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. And that's another reason why you might want to, and I think the law actually calls for, the proposal calls for a second medical opinion.
It does. Yeah, you got to get two doctors to sign off. And if they disagree, then they engage a mental health doctor, somebody to, I guess, judge, are you psychologically able to make this as an informed and mature decision? Speaking of Illinois lawmakers, you wrote about secretly recording lawmakers in Illinois. What's the story about this, Eric?
Well, this is something I had no idea. I was reading some of the stories about the fallout from the conviction of Michael Madigan and the proposed ethics ordinances and changes in the law and so on. And I just saw this paragraph in a Tribune story saying that there's a state law that state lawmakers passed that forbids state and local prosecutors from wiretapping public officials who are suspected of corruption. I had no idea. I mean, I've been covering corruption in Illinois, you know, since I got to the Tribune in the 80s. And I just had no idea. And there's all along this drumbeat of people saying, why didn't Lisa Madigan investigate corruption? And, you know, why didn't Roland Burris investigate corruption? Or Jim Ryan investigate corruption in Illinois? And the answer is that they don't have the tools that the U.S. I mean, I didn't even know this.
The FBI can do it. Yeah. And the Department of Justice can, but the state can't.
State and local prosecutors can't. The Attorney General of Illinois can't. The Cook County State's Attorney can't do that. And I can't think off the top of my head of a justification for that just doesn't sound like they're protecting themselves from consequences of their own corruption. That seems like such low-hanging fruit for a change in the law. Like, look, if a prosecutor thinks you're corrupt, they ought to be able to investigate you the same way the feds can investigate you. And there's a lot more person power on the ground in the county and in the state than there is just in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
And I assume you'd have to get a judge to sign off on it. I can imagine, though, every lawmaker and alderman in Chicago and every lawmaker in Springfield, they would all be wired up. You know, none of them would get through a metal detector. They would have all of these wires and bells and whistles on. Everybody would be listening in on everybody.
Well, if judges signed off on it, yeah. I mean, and the judges don't just sign off on wiretap and bugging devices willy-nilly.
Right.
It's one of the things where I was reading along, and it was one of those things, you know, where you spit out your coffee all over the newspaper.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
what?
Perhaps it is first of all, I'm not sure that the Cook County State's Attorney's Office is equipped to do this. Maybe they are. You know, maybe it's just like the feds. It's some guys in a van listening and recording what's being said. It's depend upon a judge being rational about who's going to be wired and not. But it is happening. That is, the FBI is able to do this. The Department of Justice is able to do this. But I'm with you. I didn't know that. And if I get to be king, they'll be allowed. Talking to Eric Zorn, listen to this message that just poured in. Eric, hey, John, I work for a university, and we aren't sure if we will lose our jobs. I was just in the Chicagoland area over the weekend, and I went to eat with my mother. She voted for Trump. When I explained how bad it is to cut funding for medical research and how this is the best job I have ever had as a nurse, her reply was, well, he's the only one brave enough to take on and cut the waste in this country's government. She told me I could get another job. Wow, way to be supportive, Mom. I spent the first 2 years of Trump not talking to her. At that time, she told me, you're just going to have to deal with it. I think these cuts and these people are cruel. So some of you are running into that tough conversation. You lost your job, and now somebody in your family voted for this administration. Although I wonder how many people who voted for this administration are themselves losing those jobs. I did hear one guy interviewed on The Daily, and he's out, and he still supports his vote. I guess why wouldn't you, right? You want to justify it no matter what, even though you're now unemployed. And I think about that. That sounds like a number. It's just a thing. But when somebody loses their job summarily, and I don't know how long these people continue to get paid. Remember guys in the FBI were going to get paid until September. But when you lose your job, you lose your money. You lose your mortgage payment. You lose your savings or ability to save. You may lose your insurance. If you got to go on that supplemental insurance you buy on your own, you know how expensive COBRA can be. I mean, it's just shattering to so many people. Do we need to cut people? Yes. And the only thing that any of us would advocate for was cut the right people, cut the right positions, do it properly, do it as humanely as we can. We've been getting along this way all along. Now we are finally sort of taking our own medicine, but let's not kill the patient in the process. Let's be smart about it. That's all. I think everybody can be there. And then we all go off into our silos to the right or left. But yes, you guys want to cut, do it. Do it smart. Cut the right people, and then be as fair as you can about that termination. Eric Zorn, your witness.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, you didn't mention car payments that people have to make and tuition sometimes for their children in schools or in daycare or wherever they are. I mean, these are people, and they have bills to pay, and they have lives, and they have aspirations. And to look at them as just a number is cruel, and I think it matches, in my mind, the sort of strangely spectrumy behavior of Elon Musk. I don't think that he relates to people, that he understands the pain that losing a job can cause somebody. And I, like I say, these are just numbers to them, but they are real lives, and they are people in real trouble, real pain, real distress.
Yeah.
And I the one thing that, you know, you talk about this, and these people say, I voted for Trump because he's the only one brave enough to cut spending. And I do think, and I believe I've said this on the podcast, is that the Democratic Party has not been good about rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse in government. And they have not been good about cutting spending. Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, won't even think about it.
It doesn't even come up. It doesn't even come up.
He refuses to do it. And we all know that there is padding in government. There are programs that we should not be funding. And they find, you know, they can identify these things. And it's not huge, but it betrays a lack of seriousness about the use of taxpayer money that I am on the left. I believe in most of the things the Democratic Party believes in. I believe in government, but I also believe in efficiency. And the fact that the Democrats have not been good about that, have not been leading the way on making sure the government runs well, gave an opening to Trump. And so that's where we are right now. This is an extreme overreaction. The pendulum has swung so far over that it's going to tip the table over. But I see how it happened, and I understand what this person's mother was saying, which was like, "Hey, were the Democrats ever going to get in there and trim spending?"
You've had your chance, yeah. Well, and Elon Musk, of all people, the billionaire who has way too much power right now and is cynical and has zero empathy. Not that we need a softie to do this, but I mean, his autism is on full display, if you ask me. And this is the way he thinned Twitter. And I'm not against thinning the federal government, but if you wanted it to be done humanely or precisely, this is 100% the wrong person. But it's also a person who won't care. Like, I would never cut anybody because I'm too much of a softie. Elon does not care. And one last thing about this, Eric. In the private sector, this happens all the time. You will see stories, 10,000 people were laid off. Do you think they called them all in one at a time, sat them down, and had a thoughtful conversation about it? Mass firings happen. So I understand the reality of that. But it's like these guys weren't even trying. It's like they didn't even have a plan. They just said, go in and start cutting. Give people till midnight, and if they can't justify their job, they're out. That's not going to happen, but that's what they tried to do.
Yeah, I don't think that this business of trying to justify your job, how are they possibly going to read all those emails anyway? I saw somewhere that they're going to have AI try to.
Oh, 100%. How else would you? Yeah. We are out of time. You're fired. You are off the show. I will talk to you on the podcast. Are you going to be with us on the Mincing Rascals tomorrow?
I don't have another music gig, so I will be with you on the podcast on Wednesday, yes.
We will drop another pod with an informed panel of folks, including our friend Austin Berg, who with the Illinois Policy Institute is very interested in that M3 Strategies group that surveyed what Chicagoans care the most about. Number one is crime. Number two is inflation or taxes. It's those are Am I missing anyone? Those are the big three, right? And then other issues.
Yeah, and I can't wait to hear Austin's take on that. Also, the mayor's approval ratings are maybe the worst in history right now. They're really bad. It's interesting to talk about that tomorrow.
Talk to you then. Thank you. That's Eric Zorn. His Picayune Sentinel is yours for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com.